Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series in the book of Judges with Israel Regrets. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. We have been considering the response of the people of Israel to the moral outrage that was done by some men of the wicked city of Gibeah in the tribal territory of Benjamin. And we saw that Israel attacked the whole tribe of Benjamin when the tribe decided to back up Gibeah instead of siding with Israel against them. But they did this with only a cursory inquiry of the Lord. Instead of asking the Lord what to do, they just said, "Lord Jehovah, here's our plan. And you tell us who should go out and attack Benjamin first." So they didn't ask the Lord what the plan should be. They made up their own plan and then just gave the Lord some little small part of it. Now, twice they were defeated by Benjamin and many of them were slaughtered. We talked about the fact that this is always a sign for Israel that the Lord was not pleased with them, that they were not following his law as they should. And if they had looked at it, they would have realized that in their number they had some men from the city of Dan. These men who were at this time performing idolatrous practices with an idolatrous priest. And some people from the city of Micah in Mount Ephraim. And Micah was the one who had made the idols before Dan stole them. And so they had wicked people who deserved to die in their own camp. And yet they refused to ask the Lord why they were losing. They just asked him what they should do next. And so after their refusal, the Lord finally relented and gave them the victory in spite of their refusal to look at their own sin and why he hadn't given them the victory before. So they had come up with a plan. They had taken Gibeah behind the Benjamites after they came out to fight so that they were cut off before and behind. They tried to flee and they were wiping them out, as we left off in Judges chapter 20. And we're starting today from verse 43, where we read, "They surrounded the Benjamites, chased them, and easily trampled them down as far as the front of Gibeah toward the east." So Benjamin was surrounded once they started to flee. They tried to get away, but they couldn't manage to get away. The Israelites easily caught them and surrounded them. There were so many more Israelites than there were Benjamites. And as they tried to flee past Gibeah, the city had been burned behind them, and tried to head east, the Israelites trampled them down. The Israelites destroyed them, killed them. Verse 44, "And 18,000 men of Benjamin fell. All these were men of valor." So the result is that they slaughtered 18,000 Benjamites. And this was the greater portion of the Benjamite army. Verse 45, "Then they turned and fled toward the wilderness, to the rock of Rimmon. And they cut down 5,000 of them on the highways. Then they pursued them relentlessly up to Gidom and killed 2,000 of them." So Benjamin decided fleeing in that direction wasn't working. So they tried to turn and flee toward the rock Rimmon, which means pomegranate. And this was out in the wilderness, in the uninhabited places. And they seemed to figure if they could get there, the Israelite army wouldn't follow them there. And they apparently were correct. They didn't. But 5,000 of them don't make it. They're cut down and slaughtered by the Israelite army on the way to the rock Rimmon. And the Israelite army pursues them all the way to Gidom, which means cutting down. And appropriately, they are cutting them down on the way to Gidom. And they slaughter 2,000 more on that road. Verse 46, "So all who fell of Benjamin that day were 25,000 men who drew the sword. All these were men of valor." So few of the Benjamite army escaped. 25,000 died this day. And all these were mortal men who were strong for war. Here's the idea of this phrase. First of all, 25,000 men, that's the word mortal men. And then men of valor, that's this word men who of strength, basically, who are strong for war. Now, earlier we had read 25,100. And I don't know for sure what the difference was, unless the 100 were only wounded and died the next day or something like that. But it's about 25,000 Benjamites who die this day. Verse 47. But 600 men turned and fled toward the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon, and they stayed at the rock of Rimmon for 4 months. So, well, 7,000 died trying to get to the rock of Rimmon. 600, less than a tenth, actually made it. So 600 Benjamites actually managed to escape to the rock Rimmon. And they were right. The Israelites did leave off the pursuit and let them escape once they got to Rimmon. And they lived there for 4 months. Now, there is a difference in the numbers here, because we started with 26,700 men in the Benjamite army. Remember, 26,000, and 700 of them were from the wicked city of Gibeah. 26,000 from the other cities. So 25,000 died this day. What happened to the remaining 1,100 men? Well, probably some of them had died during the first 2 days. Even though Benjamin had had the victory over Israel and had slaughtered many in Israel those days, there's no particular reason to think that absolutely no Benjamites died those days. Probably a few of them died, even though they generally conquered and killed many more Israelites. Probably a few Benjamites fell. And then it could be that some of them didn't flee to the Rock Rimmon. They fled to some of the other Benjamite cities. And so they were later cut down in the following destruction, as we'll read about it in the next verse. So out of all the Benjamite men, young men, men capable of going to war, only 600 escape. But what about all the women? What about all the children? What about all the old people? Well, they don't escape. Verse 48. And the men of Israel turned back against the children of Benjamin and struck them down with the edge of the sword. From every city, men and beasts, all who were found. They also set fire to all the cities they came to. So here we have the destruction of Benjamin. And the Israelite army, after they have destroyed all of Benjamin except those 600 who escape, they turn back to the territory of Benjamin, now undefended, and they start to act as a systematic purge of Benjamin. Now, where did they ever get the idea of doing a systematic purge? Well, of course, they'd gotten that idea because that is what the Lord had demanded they do to the Canaanite nations. And they had done this to some of these Canaanite nations. These Canaanite nations were so wicked, so godless, that God had said, wipe them out, destroy them, man, woman, and child, devote them to me. Some of the cities he didn't even let them take the plunder. Some of them he did, but he said, every human being you have to destroy. Now, they treat Benjamin the same way. Now, notice that they had treated some of the Canaanites better than this. Because when they found some of the Canaanites too strong for them, or they had already gone to their territories and they didn't want to fight anymore, they had made treaties with the Benjamites. And as I said, I believe that's exactly why Benjamin had gotten so corrupted in such a short period of time. Just one or two generations, is living among these Canaanites. They were so immoral, so wicked, that Benjamin had gone from being the people of the Lord, who in a few decades being so wicked that they were acting like Sodom, that wicked nation in Genesis that the Lord had wiped out with fire from heaven. And the way they got so wicked was by the influence of the Canaanites whom they had made treaties with and lived among. But this same Israelite army, who had been too lazy to wipe out the wicked Canaanites, finds plenty of energy to wipe out their brother tribe of Benjamin. And they destroy every man, every woman, every child of the Benjamites. And all the animals. And all the spoil. They don't keep it, they just wipe it out. They set all the cities on fire. In other words, they treat Benjamin as if they were devoted to destruction by God. But here's the question. Did God really want this? Did he really want Benjamin wiped out systematically like this? Did he really want every man, woman, and child in the tribe wiped out like this? Who knows? Israel certainly didn't know, because they never asked. They just decided to do this. And remember, this is the title that's hanging over this whole last section of Judges, these last five chapters. It is, as we have it in the last verse of the book, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And the fact is that this wholesale slaughter of Benjamin is what is right in the eyes of the Israelite army. They never asked God. They just did it. Now, would God have wanted it? Well, maybe he would have wanted it for the wicked city of Gibeah. I mean, if they had become as wicked as Sodom, they deserved to be wiped out. But the whole tribe? Surely there were some people in the tribe who weren't so wicked, who didn't necessarily deserve being wiped out, who might have been redeemable. But again, we're not told. Israel just did this, and the Lord's opinion on it, they never asked. Well, it seems that the purge took them 4 months. This is a huge territory. This is many people they had to execute. So they went through and they purged them all. But now, after 4 months of this hard work of slaughtering all these people, we find in the next chapter that it seems that they finally stopped to think. Judges chapter 21 and verse 1. Now the men of Israel had sworn an oath at Mizpah, saying, "None of us shall give his daughter to Benjamin as a wife." So we find out here, as a prelude to what happens in this final chapter of Judges, is that prior to going to war against their brother tribe of Benjamin, when they find out that Benjamin is going to back up these wicked men of Gibeah and not allow Israel to wipe them out, is that in the heat of their zeal, they all swear that I will never give one of my daughters to Benjamin as a wife. I'll never do that. And they all swore it. And they pronounced a curse against anyone who would do it. Benjamin, they're so bad for backing up this wickedness. They don't deserve any women. We would never give them one of our daughters. Verse 2, then the people came to the house of God and remained there before God till evening. They lifted up their voices and wept bitterly. So they returned from slaughtering Benjamin and they returned to the house of God. But here's a question about this house of God. Because we know that the place God had chosen to put his name at this time was Shiloh, the place where the temple was. But there was also a city called the house of God, Beth-El. That was where Jacob had seen his vision of the ladder going up to heaven with angels going up and down on it, or maybe it was a stairway, it's hard to say. And he had thought that was the gate of heaven, so he named it Beth-El, because he says this is where God dwells, this is the conduit between earth and heaven. So when it says that their camp was at the house of God, do they mean it was at Shiloh where the tabernacle was? Or do they mean at Beth-El that was named house of God? Well, it's hard to say because verse 12 seems to indicate they meant Shiloh, but verse 19 seems to indicate they didn't mean Shiloh. So where exactly this camp is, it's hard to say. It seems like maybe it was somewhere between Beth-El and Shiloh that were fairly close together. But they come back to their camp at the house of God, wherever that was, Beth-El or Shiloh, and they come before God until evening, and they come before him weeping bitterly. And it seems that now that they've done this slaughter for 4 months, they've gone through and systematically slaughtered every man, woman, and child in these towns. Now that it's over, they start to regret it. Verse 3, and said, "O Lord God of Israel, why has this come to pass in Israel, that today there should be one tribe missing in Israel?" So they realize that one tribe is all but wiped out of Israel. And they say, why has this happened? Why? Well, duh, remember this follows on. They're going through a four-month war of extermination, wherein they systematically went through every Benjamite city and wiped out every inhabitant. So after doing this, like I said, this took a lot of time and effort to wipe out all these Benjamites. Now they regret it. Seems kind of late to regret it, doesn't it? And once again, remember verse 25, the theme of this whole section. That every man did what was right in his own eyes. While they were doing it, this is what seemed good to them. How dare they back up such moral wickedness? We'll wipe them all out for it. But wiping all the Benjamites out wasn't what had been commanded by the Lord. It was their own idea. It was their own whim to wipe Benjamin out. And now they have a new whim. It's too bad that Benjamin's wiped out because we don't want a tribe missing from Israel. Well, one day they feel one way and one day another. Do you think God would have set up such a plan? No, God would have done something orderly and sensible. But these people are just doing what's right in their own eyes. And that is always a mess. We need guidance from God, not just acting on our own whims. They had God's prophets, God's priests, way of contacting God. We have God's word, the Bible. But we too need to act like God would tell us to act in the Bible and not just act on our own feelings and not just act on our own whims. And this book of Judges is showing us the extreme things that can happen when every man does what is right in his own eyes, and when we don't consult the Lord to see what's right in his. Verse 4. So it was on the next morning that the people rose early and built an altar there, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So the next day they get up early, and they build an altar to the Lord, and they seek Jehovah with offerings. So here's a question. Why did they have to build an altar there when there was already an altar before the tabernacle? Remember, there was God's bronze altar of sacrifice before his tabernacle at Shiloh. So this indicates that wherever they're camped, they're not camped at the tabernacle. They're not camped at God's house, the tabernacle, because there they would have had an altar. So maybe this indicates that they were more at Beth-El than at Shiloh. Although, as I said later, we'll see evidence that they were at Shiloh. Well, with the whole Israelite army camped, it could be that the camp spread out for quite a ways, and the camp extended from Beth-El to Shiloh. And there were people camped all along in that area, being that they're fairly close together. Verse 5, the children of Israel said, who is there among all the tribes of Israel who did not come up to the assembly of the Lord? For they had made a great oath concerning anyone who had not come up to the Lord at Mizpah, saying, he shall surely be put to death. So they also start to wonder, because they remember the oaths that they had sworn before the war against Benjamin. They had sworn, first of all, not to give any Benjamite one of their daughters. But second of all, they had sworn to destroy any city that did not send any men to the assembly at Mizpah. Now, this didn't mean that every single man from the city had to come. But this meant that every city had to send representatives. Every city had to send someone to the army. Someone to represent that city to fight for the Lord. And apparently, while they had made this oath, they hadn't checked to see yet if every city had indeed sent someone. And so now that it's all over, they say, you know, we never checked. Did all the cities send someone like we demanded, or did any not? Verse 6. And the children of Israel grieved for Benjamin their brother and said, one tribe is cut off from Israel today. So they had wept the day before until evening. Then the next day they made this altar and offered sacrifices, but they're still grieving. They're still sad for their brother Benjamin and weeping for him and saying, how could one tribe be wiped out? But again, how fickle. They just got done wiping him out themselves. And now they're weeping about it. After wiping him out, now they regret it. Well, once you've slaughtered all those tens of thousands of people, it's kind of too late to wish you hadn't. Verse 7, what shall we do for wives for those who remain, seeing we have sworn by the Lord that we will not give them our daughters as wives? So they know that there are still these 600 Benjamites left at the rock Rimmon. I don't know if they know there are 600, they find that out later, but they know there are some anyway from Benjamin there. And they say, well, Benjamin doesn't have to be wiped out, there's those 600 men still alive. So there can still be a Benjamin with those 600 men, but, uh-oh, not if they can't get any wives. And we all swore not to give them any wives. And we just wiped out all the Benjamite women. Now notice they don't say that. They say the reason these Benjamite men can't have any wives is that we pledge not to give our daughters to the Benjamites as wives. They say this, but they don't mention the other reason why they're worried about there not being any Benjamite children, and that is that they had wiped out every last Benjamite woman that there was. They had executed them all in a terrible purge. They don't mention that. They just mention the fact that they can't give any of their daughters to these few surviving Benjamite men. So notice this, how they're all acting on their fickle feelings. They're not consulting the Lord about any of this. They're just doing what seems right to them. The slaughter seemed right to them at first. Now Benjamin wiped out doesn't seem right to them now. It's all about what's right in their own eyes. Verse 8, and they said, what one is there from the tribes of Israel who did not come up to Mizpah but to the Lord? And in fact, no one had come to the camp from Jabesh-Gilead to the assembly. So again, their other thing they're worried about is to check, to see, because they had made this oath that every city had to send representatives to the Lord to their camp at Mizpah. And now that the war is all over, they have a chance to check and see, did every city indeed send representatives? Now, I suppose they'd have to check not only of the living ones, but the ones who had been slaughtered in the war as well. I mean, some of them had died against Benjamin. So they better make sure that they didn't send representatives and they died. But apparently they went through and checked, and they go through each city in Israel one by one, and each tribe would probably know the cities in it, even if the other tribes didn't know the cities in their fellow tribes. And so they know all the cities, and they're able to check, and they check and check and check, and finally they find that there is one city. But this is a major city. This isn't a small town. There's a major city, Jabesh in Gilead, where no one had come to the Israelite camp. No one had come, according to their demand and their oath. Verse 9, for when the people were counted, indeed, not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead was there. So they check, they go through, they count. They probably, like I said, take a census of everyone who's there, as well as a census of probably everyone who got killed in the war. And they find out that there is not a single representative from Jabesh and Gilead. Now notice this, even one single man from Jabesh, that man would have been enough to spare the rest of the city. As long as there had been a single representative, that representative would have stood in for the city and kept it from the slaughter. But there wasn't a single one. And that is a theme that's important in the Bible, is that often one man can stand in the gap for everyone else in his city or everyone else in his nation. And of course, that goes back to the fact that the Lord is the one who stood in the gap for us, that he died for us so that we could be saved, the one man who saved us all. Well, in this case, Jabesh Gilead doesn't have the one man to save them all. Probably there were quite a few cities in Israel who had just a single representative there, but Jabesh Gilead doesn't have even one. Verse 10, so the congregation sent out there 12,000 of their most valiant men and commanded them, saying, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead with the edge of the sword, including the women and children. So they send out 12,000 of their most valiant men. Hebrew there reads, sons of strength. In other words, very strong and capable men. And they send them to wipe out Jabesh and Gilead, according to their oath. So notice their solution here, more slaughter. Wonderful. Well, this was the oath they had made. Any city didn't send someone, he would die. So they follow their oath. But again, what an oath. Verse 11, and this is the thing that you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every male and every woman who has known a man intimately. So they say, but here's the thing. Don't wipe out everyone there. Just wipe out every male and every woman who's not a virgin in Jabesh Gilead. You see where they're going with this? They're saying these two oaths, maybe we can make them work together. So if they don't wipe out the virgin girls, well then lo and behold, they can solve this problem they have with Benjamin at the same time as they solve taking care of their oath that they would wipe out any city that didn't send representatives. But notice this, that this is their idea again. Slaughter, slaughter, and more slaughter. And when everyone does what's right in their own eyes, destruction, it seems, is what follows. So in this portion, we see that Israel slaughters Benjamin as if they were under the ban or devoted to Yahweh. Yet Yahweh had never demanded this. They just decided to do it. And then after doing it, they regretted it and wanted to bring Benjamin back. They're in trouble, though, because Benjamin has no women left, them having wiped them all out. And they only have 600 men remaining, while men can't have children themselves. So their solution? Wipe out some other Israelites and take their girls and give them to Benjamin. Great. Slaughter, death, destruction. That's what they're doing. That's what they're all about. Well, this is the kind of thing that happens when everyone does what's right in their own eyes. We can criticize it, but do we do the same thing? Maybe not wholesale slaughter, but do we follow what God really says he wants? Or do we do, either religiously or in the rest of our lives, just what seems good to us? And don't worry about what seems good to God and what he would say to do in his word. Do we do what God wants or what's right in our own eyes? This is the great lesson of this last section of Judges.
Only after slaughtering them does Israel realize that Benjamin is one of the 12 legitimate tribes of Israel, the brothers of those who had destroyed them. Since Israel had schemed without God for Benjamin's destruction, they continue to scheme without God in an attempt to save them. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on Israel Regrets. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the Book of Judges with Wives for Benjamin. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you study God's Word more, you know and love God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We offer a free weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say so long for now, but we always look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.